Blog Talk Radio.
It's Film Festival Radio, the show where superstars and future stars happily coexist together. And now, here's your host, Janice Malone.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone. It is that time of show again. It's time for us to do a show. That's what time it is. We are here. We have guests, and we're going to entertain you, hopefully, and just, you know, some good listening, have a lot of fun, hopefully, just be entertained, you know, get you your favorite drink, popcorn, whatever it is that you like to snack on, and just take a listen to our guests. And I'll tell you more about them as we go along. So here we are. We are in March, my birthday month. Oh, let's not talk about that. But anyway, let's talk about this. Before we get to our guests, I got some really fun information here that I think you will enjoy. I did not know this. Maybe a lot of you out there know this. I didn't know that March is like international, it has an International Happiness Day. Where did that come from? I don't even know what date it is, but it's in March. It's International Day of Happiness. I guess we can just look it up later. Well, with that thought in mind, the personal finance website, Wallet Hub, yes, wallethub.com, they do all of this, you know, they tell you how to, you know, best credit cards and best rates for credit cards. They just kind of help give tips, helpful tips about how to manage our money if we have any better. And so they really do have a lot of really cool information. So check them out, wallethub.com. So they released this report on the happiest cities in America so far for 2024. And so go again, wallethub.com to check out a bit further details. So according to Wallet Hub, they compared, they did all their homework and research and such, and they compared more than 180 of the largest U.S. cities across 29 key indicators of happiness. The data set ranges from depression rate to the income growth rate to the average leisure time spent per day. Of course, I don't know what most of that means, but it sounds real good to me, probably to you too, what it boils down to. According to WalletHub, they have, using all of those indicators, using all of that data, they have come up with the top 20 happiest cities in America. Let's see, do I have time to get all 20 in within like 60 seconds? Okay, minute and a half. Okay, number 20 on WalletHub.com's top 20 happiest cities in America. Number 20 is Bismarck, North Dakota. 19 is Lincoln, Nebraska. 18 is Seattle, Washington. Number 17 is Portland, Maine. Number 16 is Fargo, North Dakota. Number 15 is San Diego, California. Why is San Diego number 15? That should be higher than, well, okay. Anyway, number 14 is Garden Grove, California. Number 13 is Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number 12 is Huntington Beach, California. Number 11 is Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So the Dakotas are cutting up real fast and quick and cute here on being on the list of 20th happiest cities in America. Shout out to you, North and South Dakota. Number 10 is Scottsdale, Arizona. Number 9 is Columbia, Maryland. Number 8 is Pearl City, Hawaii. Well, that's kind of a giveaway, is Hawaii. Number 7 is San Francisco. Number 6 is Honolulu. Again, that's kind of a dead giveaway there. No, it's Hawaii. At number 5 is Irvine, California. Number 4 is Madison, Wisconsin. Oh, that surprised me. Madison, Wisconsin. Okay, shout out to you. Number 3 is San Jose, California. Number 2 is Overland Park, Kansas. Now, see, I would have thought San Diego would be like in the top 5 or so. Well, how much do I know? And number 1, the number 1 happiest city in America, according to WalletHub.com, is Fremont, California. Mm-hmm. Did not know that. Isn't that interesting? And check this out, to further speak of Hawaii. Again, according to WalletHub.com, Pearl City, Hawaii has the lowest depression rate, which is 2.7 times lower than Lewiston, Maine, the city that has the highest depression rate, according to WalletHub.com. And Fremont, California has the lowest separation and divorce rate, which is 4.6 times lower than in Detroit, the city with the highest separation and divorce rate. Yeah, it's just real interesting stuff here. Well, let's go back to the Dakotas before I leave. Missoula, Montana, and Bismarck, North Dakota have the lowest average commute time, which is 2.6 times lower than New York, the city with the highest. I would have thought maybe somewhere like Dallas, Atlanta, or Los Angeles about the commute time, but again, what do I know? So if you would like to get more information about how they compile this list, go again to wallethub.com/mark/edu/mark happiest-places-2-live-32619. That's a hellified URL, but it's worth it. You know, go to wallethub.com and you'll see it all right there. Okay. Let's talk about our guest here. We have 3 guests here. We have there's a new film, original film that is currently streaming on Paramount Plus. It's titled Little Wing. So we have the director of the film, Dean Israelite. He's a 2-time Emmy nominee, director and executive producer. And so he will be joining us. And we also have 2 of the stars of the film, Little Wing. The principal 2 stars will be joining us as well. So stay tuned. And our second guest is a world-renowned symphony conductor. Yes, his name is Maestro Taras Krisa, and he will be joining us to talk about his upcoming trip to conduct the Ukrainian Orchestra. Oh, it's going to be just wait until you hear it. So he's based here in Las Vegas, but he is a native of the Ukraine, and so he's about to travel over to his native country to conduct this very special series of concerts to inspire and support his native countrymen during their ongoing war with Russia. So it's a very noteworthy concert. And so he'll be talking about that along with some other concerts that he will be conducting here in Las Vegas late next month. So stay tuned. Go get you some whatever, beer, milk, don't mix the two together, hopefully, or whatever. Maybe you just want a nice tall glass of lemonade or something, you know, just whatever you do. Come back, listen to our show, and then you are fully released to move about the cabin after our show ends, of course. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be chatting with our first guest, Dean Israelite, the director of the new Paramount Plus original film, Little Wing. So we'll be right back. We are back here on Film Festival Radio Show. Thank you for listening, as always. So we've got guests. I mean, we've got some really nice guests. We always have nice guests, but I mean, these are exceptionally nice guests here. So let's start with a little bit about our first guest. Well, our first guest is a Emmy Award-nominated director and executive producer. His name is Dean Israelite, and he is the director, remember Power Rangers? That's Dean Israelite's work. And I should say he is a two-time Emmy Award nominee. And now we're going to talk about his current project here. He has a new film. It's titled Little Wing. He has a new project. It's titled Little Wing, and it is on Paramount Plus, currently streaming. So what is this film about? It's a lovely film, kind of a coming-of-age type of genre there, and it follows the story of a young lady. She's a teenager, and she's trying to get over and adjust from her parents' recent divorce, and there's a pending possibility that, you know, she's just, you know, going, if you've been through a divorce as a teen or a kid, you know what that's like. And she's just, you know, the loss of stability with the parents is just having a reckon. So the loss of the parent home, take three. So the loss of the two-parent home and all of that is just kind of wreaking havoc on this young lady. So she hopes to solve her mother's financial problems by stealing a valuable bird, which is a pigeon, but instead she forms a bond with the owner of this valuable bird, and that leads her to a new outlook on life. This film actually is based on a New Yorker article by Susan Orleans about the world of pigeon racing. Yes, I did not know pigeon racing. I did not know that pigeons could be raced. I really did not know that. You know, we're used to seeing pigeons in the parking lots and courtyards, and they sometimes are a nuisance. But apparently there is some big value in the world of pigeon racing. So that storyline is about the world of pigeon racing is tied in there. So the storyline has the storyline does have an element about pigeon racing within it. And so that brings me back to director, executive producer Dean Israelite, our guest here. He has a very personal connection to the film because when he was growing up in Johannesburg, South Africa, his family raced pigeons. Yes, and so this, you know, it's just kind of ironic that he would now do and direct an executive produce a film with a storyline that is about pigeon racing. So he's going to chat with us to share how closely bonded he is with the world of pigeon racing from his childhood. Interesting stuff. So we're going to talk to Dean Israelite first, and then afterwards we're going to roll into the two main stars of this film. Again, it is streaming on Paramount Plus. The two young stars, we'll be talking to them. But first, let's talk to our guest, Dean Israelite, the director and executive producer of the new Paramount Plus film. So first, let's talk to, but before we get to our next set of guests, let's first talk to Dean Israelite again. He is the director and executive producer of the new Paramount Plus film, Little Wing. So let's roll it right now. Well, let's just jump right in here. You are the executive producer of this new Paramount Plus original movie titled Little Wing, exclusively streaming to Paramount Plus. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's talk about Little Wing. What is this? It's a very beautiful story. So give us the basis of the storyline here.
Sure. It's based on a Susan Orlean New Yorker article. And it's a coming-of-age film about a young girl played by Brooklyn Prince who's reeling from her parents' divorce. And because of the parents' divorce, her mom has to sell the house, and she really doesn't want the mom to sell her house. And she gets given, out of all things, two racing pigeons. She knows nothing about racing pigeons, as most people don't. And her best friend does a bunch of research on them and says, you know, these are amazing creatures. And there's a big subculture of pigeon racers and pigeon fanciers, and it's set in Portland. And he tells her that actually there's a guy who has a pigeon worth $250,000 right here in Portland. And so she decides to go and steal that bird in order to try and save her house. And needless to say, it does not go well. And she attempts to steal it from a character played by Brian Cox. And Brooklyn Prince's character and Brian Cox's character end up developing this unlikely relationship and end up saving each other's lives in a lot of different ways. And ultimately, I think it's a movie about real people going through real things. But I think by the end is very life-affirming.
Tell us about, I understand that this whole about pigeons and as pets and racing pigeons is very close to you personally. So tell everybody your connection to this.
Yeah, so about 6 years ago when the screenwriter John Gaidens called me up, he said, you know, are you interested in reading this weird little script I wrote about pigeon racing? And I said, well, John, my father and grandfather were some of the preeminent pigeon racers in Johannesburg, South Africa in the 60s. So I grew up hearing all of these stories. I'd love to read the script. I fell in love with the movie for way more than the pigeons, for the themes that the characters are going through. But I really wanted to do justice to these animals, and they become a metaphor for everything that's going through that the characters are going through. And I just had this kind of baseline knowledge of this weird sport.
You know, you see pigeons. I mean, where I live in our courtyard, we see so many pigeons, and I forgot about their pigeon races and such in the world. I forgot all about that, but
they're incredible. Yeah, they're incredible animals, and you know they always have one home, you know, and that's why they were used, you know, in World War II, et cetera, to carry messages, because they're always going to fly back to the place that they were raised, and they'll fly hundreds, thousands of miles, and nobody really knows how they navigate that, they're unbelievably bright, and it's just incredible. And what I love is that people see this movie and they come up to me and they tell me that, you know, they're never going to look at a pigeon the same again.
I know that I won't, for sure. In fact, I'm looking at two of them out in the courtyard now. So I will definitely look at them totally differently. So, okay. And finally, how do you hope that Little Wing will be able to relate to a lot of young people who may see the film?
I mean, I hope that, you know, for young people, and I do think that this movie is for all audiences. I think it's for their parents as well. I think it's for people without kids too, because it's about a time in our lives that we all remember well. And there are adult characters going through their own journeys too that I think are very relatable. And I hope that everybody sort of can recognize that we're all live close to crisis, I think, especially in the last few years. I think we're all understand that we're one moment away from crisis, and that all of these characters need to figure out a way to push through to the other side of that. And, you know, when pigeons are released in a race, they're released by a guy called the Liberator, which is just such a great name. And I think that the movie is about, you know, these characters finding liberation from the crises that they are in. And so I hope that audiences connect with that idea.
And finally, since you are a two-time Emmy Award nominee here, I know you are working on something even more spectacular. So can you tell us a little bit about your next project?
Yeah, I have a project, a thriller, very different, called Can You Hear Me? That Kevin Hart's company is producing, and these financiers, The Hideaway, who are great at financing. And it's sort of a one-man psychological thriller about a phone scam, actually, all set in a single apartment. So very different, very challenging, very tense, but also about things that I think are pretty relevant to us today and pretty timely. So that will be a different experience.
Very different. And that genre is probably my favorite style of films and TV, the whole psychological thriller thing, real Brian De Palma-ish. So I can't wait for that one. Well, in the meantime, while we're waiting on that one, we will definitely tune in to Paramount Plus, A Little Wing. So thank you so much, Dean, for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care then. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much, Dean Israelite, for giving us a little backstory there. Really interesting story as to how he grew up in the world of pigeon racing, and now he's directing this new film on Paramount Plus. Is also, I need to note, it is a Paramount Plus original film. Again, the title is Little Wing. And to further speak of the film, as I've said earlier during Dean's segment, we are about to speak to the two stars of Little Wing, Brooklyn Prince and Shay Tafari. And they do an amazing, outstanding job in the characters that they are portraying in this film. It's a very... Again, the film is a very heartwarming story. It was based upon writer Susan Orlean's article that appeared in the New Yorker magazine about the world of pigeon racing. And so then they kind of put the rest of it in there, but it all rounds up to a very fine film. So we are about to chat, as I said, with the two lead actress. Again, it's Brooklyn Prince and Shay Tafari. And they are just outstanding in this film. So make sure that you go to Paramount Plus if you are a subscriber. And if you're not, this might be a good time to do so. So let's roll it with my recent chat with Brooklyn Prince and Shay Tafari, the stars of the new Paramount Plus original film, Little Wing. Let's roll it. Okay. Hello. We have on board here Brooklyn Prince and is it Shay Tafari?
Yes, Shay Tafari, yes.
Okay, so we've got both of you on board, and I guess I should say that both of you are the principal stars of the new original film, Little Wing, starting with Paramount Plus. So, okay, let's talk about this a minute here. So, okay, tell me about your characters in a lot of time we have here. Tell me each about your characters.
So Caitlin is a typical 13-year-old girl, and as ordinary as that sounds, she has an unordinary story. So Caitlin is a typical 13-year-old girl whose life's kind of falling apart before her eyes. Her parents got a divorce. Her brother doesn't talk anymore. Her best friend is sort of growing apart from her, and she's losing the only house she's ever known. Some people, you know, maybe older people, this, you know, can be manageable. Life will go on. But to Caitlin, being a 13-year-old girl, it feels like the end of everything. And so she is desperately trying to save her house, trying to save anything that she can just to feel normal again and to feel like she can manage these big feelings that she's having. And with these emotions comes her wild and epic story. That is Little Wing.
Okay.
Yeah. And my character, you know, Adam King, you know, I mean, he's definitely, he's Caitlin's ride or die. And, you know, I mean, he definitely has his own side as well. I mean, not only is he like very, I guess, how would you say, like, academically studious?
He's academically studious.
Yeah. I guess that's the right phrase to say. But I mean, he has so much to him, as in, like, there's a lot of the times that, like, you know, where we see that he's internalizing a lot of stuff, you know, and I think that's one big thing that we see in a lot of, I guess 13-year-old boys becoming men, you know, like, you know, internalizing a lot of stuff, feeling like they can't ask for help. And, you know, I just feel like that is so good that we can see Adam. He's so comfortable with his parents and that he feels that he could talk to them about anything almost. telling them, hey, you know what? I'm just going to tell them everything as a way to escape almost. I just feel like Adam, you know, she's a typical 13-year-old boy too. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, she's saying, oh, this is big. I don't know what to do. I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to do this. And, you know, just the anxiety of just having so much anxiety about certain things, you know. I totally feel that as well myself, you know, seeing things that are just so, that seem so big. And just, I feel like that's the main thing about him just being a typical 13-year-old boy who's going through hormone changes, his body's changing, you know, his voice is changing, you know, and his whole mentality is changing as well. And, you know, I feel like I think a lot of 13-year-old boys will relate to.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot. 13, both of your characters are seems like they have a lot on their shoulders just to be really preteens, actually, as we see here.
Yeah, the teens are, they're a big time. They're a big time, and they sure are a handful.
Well, now, yesterday I talked to the director, Dean Israelite, the director of Little Wing, and he had a lot to say, of course. So I want to throw in here really quickly that a big part of the storyline of Little Wing is about pigeon racing. So had either one of you ever been exposed to that sport? I forgot about you could race pigeons myself.
I honestly didn't know. I just knew about horse racing. So literally I was like, oh, pigeon racing. And then they say that pigeon racing is the poor man's horse racing. That's what Caitlin says. And so I didn't know about it, but then I immediately wanted to know about it. And when I did, blessed with the knowledge.
Yeah, I'm with you. What about you, Shay? Had you known about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I never really heard of pigeon racing. You know, I just thought so lowly of pigeons. I thought they were just
car pigeons.
Yeah, I just thought that they were just rats in the sky that only lived in New York City. And I was like, yeah, you know, just. But yeah, but I mean, I got to learn so much about them from the movie, and you know, it just really illuminated so many things about them that I was like, wow, I have so much better respect for them now, and I'm just in awe with everything that they'll go through, and you know, just to get back home. Yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. We got 1 minute left here, Shay. I'm gonna remember that. Rats in the sky.
I mean, that's a harsh way.
It's very harsh, but
poor pigeons. No, back in New York though, I was scared to have them steal my food, because like in Friends, when Joey goes, Joey doesn't share food, I am very much like that, so I will not share food, not even with a pigeon.
Not even with a pigeon. Well, okay.
So I was very scared I was going to have to share my food.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. We have pigeons in our courtyard, and I just look at them and go, Now I'll look at them as being rats in the sky, thanks to Shay here. But anyway.
Shay, you're gonna make the pigeons have a bad rap.
Poor
pigeon.
It's set in my brain now. So Little Wing premieres today, Paramount Plus. So everybody, please go watch it. It's a really nice film based on Susan Orlean's article originally. So thank you, both of you, Brooklyn and Shay, for this chat. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Have fun the rest of the day now.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
You
too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, we are back with more of Film Festival Radio Show with me, Janice Malone, here at the command and the controls here. At least I like to think that I am. Well, listen, you know, if you've been listening to our show for a number of years, we have a variety of entertainment. We have all kinds of music, all types of actors and filmmakers, politicians, sports figures, and just, you know, just a good balance, I think, of entertainment people who are very talented, very smart, very busy, and we just love to showcase their current projects as to what they're doing. And so that brings me to our upcoming guest. And I'm so excited to have him here. I think this is the first time that we've had we had an opera star a few years ago before I came here to Vegas. Well, this is the first time for sure that we have had a symphony maestro conductor on. So our guest is renowned Las Vegas maestro, award-winning violinist, Maestro Taras Prisa. Yes, as I said, he is a world acclaimed conductor, and he has a very busy schedule coming up starting on March 24th all the way through the end of April. Well, what's happening here? Well, Maestro Prisa is set to conduct a series of unforgettable performances, not only here in Las Vegas, he will be fitting in a trip to the Ukraine to inspire and support his native country during their continued war with Russia. Now, as I said, Maestro Prisa, he is just known all over the world here. And so he will start the Las Vegas shows starting on March 24th. And he will lead the Las Vegas Sinfonietta in a performance of J.S. Bach's Goldberg Variations. The schedule starts here in Las Vegas on March 24th here in Las Vegas with a concert. And then the very next day, on March 25th, Maestro Prisa will travel to the Ukraine to lead the Odessa Philharmonic Orchestra in a program of inspirational classical and folk selections. And then on April 3rd, the National Symphony of Ukraine, which is hailed as the best orchestra in Ukraine, will join forces with Maestro Prisa for a captivating evening of music. It's wonderful music, and as the notes say, to inspire and uplift his fellow countrymen while he's there. Now, this schedule for the maestro will continue because he'll be back in Las Vegas on April 28th for a series of other shows and concerts here in Vegas. And it promises to be a lot of great music around the world here. So I had the opportunity to interview Maestro Taras Prisa, and he is known for his innovative and dynamic approach to classical music making. And we had a lovely chat. So fascinating, talented. That's what we do around here. So let's roll it with my recent interview with Taras Prisa, the maestro himself. So let's take a listen. First of all, let me make sure I get the correct pronunciation of your name. Is it Taras Prisa?
Yes.
Oh, I got it right. Okay. I've been practicing.
I've been used to all kind of version of my name, so nothing surprises. Nothing.
Okay. Well, okay, let me pat myself on the knee here that I got it right. So, okay, let's just start, let's just begin here. So I am speaking to the world-renowned maestro conductor Taras Prisa. So again, good afternoon to you.
Nice to be here, and you gave such a nice introduction. I'm considering myself just a musician who is doing his job.
Oh, well, Maestro, you are so modest because your credentials and your work just speaks for itself. So starting with as to why we are talking here, you are about to embark on a series of performances here in Las Vegas this spring that includes a trip to your native country of Ukraine. So let's start with telling us about the return of you to your native country in that concert.
It's been in works for a while. I mean, I'm originally from Ukraine, and I used to be music director of Lviv Philharmonic Orchestra from 2016 till 2020. So I do have a lot of professional connections as well as family. And this time I'm going to conduct National Symphony of Ukraine, which is the best orchestra in Ukraine. Very complex program that includes a tone poem by Richard Strauss called The Hero's Life. It's one of the most fleshiest or most complex and difficult works for the symphony orchestra, as well as works by Mozart and Ukrainian composer Bohdana Frulak. And then I'm continuing into Odessa Philharmonic. I have another concert there. Odessa Philharmonic Orchestra, it's the second best orchestra in Ukraine, although they think they're the best ones. I don't know. I'll leave up to them to figure this out, but they're both very, very good. And I'm doing program featuring works by Bartok, Vaughan Williams, and other Ukrainian composer Zoltan Olmashi. So, I mean, it's great. The problem, of course, well, the challenge is because it's the wartime and everything. So, but I think it's even more critically important to go there and show our support with whatever means are available to us. And when it comes to artists, it's to show that life must go on regardless the terrible war that is taking place right now.
And it is quite terrible. It's so sorry to hear that, the conflict in your native country. So obviously, do you still have family, lots of family in Ukraine?
Yes. And actually, the concert in Kyiv is unfortunately dedicated to memory of my uncle, who used to be concertmeister of this orchestra. And he passed away about a year ago. And so that's a concert of his memory. He passed away 2 years ago. We were planning to do this concert last year, but things changed because of the war and all the logistics. And so we're able to sort of zero on that date. Yes, and I do have a lot of family still there. And some of family, of course, is here. And so we'll do the best to bring two worlds together.
And now, so this Ukrainian concert will take place March 25th. Is that the only date or other dates?
No. In Kyiv, it will be April 3rd.
Okay.
And in Odessa, April 10th. So just about a week apart.
Okay.
What's happening here in Las Vegas, I'm conducting Las Vegas Sinfonietta. It's a professional chamber orchestra that we founded during the COVID years. And our concert is on March 24th, Sunday at 3 p.m. And that's the concert dedicated to Johann Sebastian Bach. And we're performing a string orchestra version of Goldberg Variations, one of the most beloved works that ever, sublime works ever written. And so if you're around, please check us out. It's LasVegasSinfonietta.com, and it's March 24th at 3 p.m.
At 3 p.m., okay. So I can only imagine how exciting both of these sets of concerts are for you, but to go back and perform and be in front of your native countrymen and women, is it a bit of nervousness for you, or is it just all pure excitement?
Well, I already did this trip twice. I already 2 years ago and last year. So, and I've lived through a missile attack last summer in Lviv. When I arrived there, it hit the very following night, just a few kilometers from where I was staying. So, the human nature works in such a way you get used to it. You get used to no matter what. And when you go there, you know it's expected. There's always an element of danger, but you know what you're doing. You're taking all the precautions. You follow all the directions. If there's a siren, you have to take shelter and so on. So, and I'm I'm amazed at the resilience of the Ukrainian people. They just go on with their lives despite whatever goes on in the skies and so on. And it's just a way of life. It's very difficult to imagine for us because we're, especially in North America, because we're relatively safe from war, as the real war, as to speak, because everything pretty much is taken overseas. Of course, we have our own problems when it comes to shooting at UNLV, for example, when it's just an unexpected. So, but anyway, I'm getting a little bit off the topic.
It's okay. Yeah, because it's all tragic. So, oh my goodness.
But it's just a way of life, and that's how they live and operate, and I think it's our duty to bring attention to the cause, because ultimately this menace has to be stopped. Putin's fascism has to be stopped, and if it's not stopped there, it will eventually reach our shores.
Definitely so. Now I understand that the Ukrainian concerts will be filmed. Is this for a documentary or something?
Yeah, just for the archival purposes, and I should be able to get some clips or whatever once I obtain permission from the administration of both orchestras. But it will be filmed, and I will have an access to at least portion of it.
Oh, that's great. That is awesome. Now, what type of, when you have done concerts there, is it a big turnout as far as audiences are concerned or what?
Yes, it's the most amazing that people go and hear concerts.
Yes.
Despite everything, because people crave culture, people crave normalcy, and that's, music has such a power to immerse and forget the real life and immerse in this imaginative world, and it speaks of power of music, it speaks of power of art to transcend and help you to heal, whatever it means for each individual to go to the concert. But yes, it's usually full and sold out.
That's wonderful to hear that the people still have a love for the arts, in spite of what's going on around them, the war and such. That's wonderful to hear. Much good. Many know that you are, in addition to being a maestro, you are also a very accomplished violinist. So will you have solo performances blended in with the Las Vegas shows as well as the Ukrainian shows?
I'm my original training was in violin. I was trained as a violinist. In my first career was as a professional violinist. After I finished my school, I continued with New World Symphony. It's one of the best youth orchestras here in U.S. And then I played professionally with the St. Louis Symphony for 3 years. Only after that, I've decided to slowly shift into conducting and follow up the conducting path. However, no matter where conducting path took me, I kept playing quite often, and as I say, whenever the phone rings, I and if I'm available, I always pick up my violin and go play wherever it may be. But I'm mainly focused on the chamber music, of course. And our last performances with the Las Vegas Sinfonietta, which was April 28th. In addition to conducting, I will be playing solo violin. Performing Schnitke Concerto Grosso Number 3. It's actually for two violins and orchestra. And another soloist will be Diane Letourneau, who is the concertmeister of Las Vegas Philharmonic, and she's a concertmeister of all major shows in town. So it will be very interesting and exciting.
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful evening to get all dressed up and come and enjoy some beautiful symphonic music, and I think I'll join you guys when this happens next month here.
Yeah, all our concerts actually on Sunday afternoons at 3 p.m. It gives you time to, after the concert, go have a nice dinner, still dressed up, and get ready, unfortunately, for Mondays.
Yes. Mondays. And so, how can people get tickets to the Vegas shows?
LasVegasSinfonietta.com.
Okay.
That's the easiest way. And everything is posted there, including links how to purchase tickets. All concerts taking place at the Flamingo Library. So it's very close to UNLV. And there's a medium-sized concert hall with wonderful acoustics. So it's actually sort of one of the best-kept secrets in town.
Ah, yes. I've passed by that building many a times there. So now I can go inside and enjoy some beautiful music. And I think we all need to kind of sit back and just listen to the music. Let the music carry us away from all of the craziness sometimes. Oh.
Absolutely. And we focus mostly on classical music because there's somewhat shortage of classical music.
Yes.
Because the way Las Vegas was envisioned and the way it's developed, the focus was, of course, on the Strip, and which is more entertainment type of music, which is could be commercial, jazz, and many other genres, but very little classical music. And classical music, of course, it's the foundation of all music, and it's more kind of a cultural enrichment and thought provoking, and you do have to be prepared for this. So it's not a pure entertainment. It's a lot of pure thinking, pure reflection, and pure inner emotional response, which we kind of, I think, lacking, especially at this time and generation with the TikTok and text messages and everything else.
Yes, everything is so quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah.
I get bored with that. Well, since you are on the forefront of classical music here in Las Vegas, is the community of classical music, is it growing, or is it just does it stand?
Well, there's two school of thoughts. there's one school of thought, it's dying because it doesn't produce the ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
Another school of thought, well, it doesn't produce the ticket sales. It's not supposed to produce the ticket sales because it's the universal culture. And the same thing as the, you know, reading Homer, Odyssey probably will not produce ticket sales. But we cannot, as a society, function without knowing this, you know, the basic knowledge. So I think it falls upon us to promote, to resurrect, and bring it back to our community. And as our community is growing very, very fast, and people coming from all over the world and all over the United States, including New York, Boston, Minneapolis, Chicago, and Los Angeles, and I think they want to hear this type of music. Also, musicians who ended up in Las Vegas for whatever reasons, where most of us making living either playing something on the Strip or teaching, as my case in university and a lot of CCSD teachers, lots of us want to play real challenging repertoire, which is difficult to play and difficult to perform. It takes a lot of training and takes a lot of rehearsal time, and the list goes on. So it's a combination of both, and I see it's coming back because we have several. Of course, there's Las Vegas Philharmonic is doing more and more. There's, of course, UNLV School of Music producing a lot of good things, and there's many groups in town such as Las Vegas Sinfonietta. There's Vegas City Opera, there's Las Vegas Opera, there's Nevada Chamber Orchestra. So it's coming back, it's resurrecting, and because there's more of us and there's more demand for it. So, but we need to be much more proactive in promoting the value of it, to value the culture value, to listener, especially to the young audiences.
Definitely so, because they are the generation that will carry it on to the next generation, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
Does it surprise you, or have you ran across people who are surprised that Las Vegas has a symphony music presence in this city?
Yes, because we're bombarded with so much, saturated with so much entertainment from the strip, and it's kind of hard to get through it in terms of marketing. But our audience, our core audience, it's usually people who really know and who really value what we do. So in other words, it's already prepared audience. They've been exposed to it. They know it. They value, they appreciate it, they love it, and they want to get every chance to hear this live. So I think our challenge to reach out to those people who are coming here, who appreciate what we do, know and value what we do, and of course to reach out to wider audiences, including younger audiences. Critically important. Mm-hmm.
And finally, when you are away from the orchestras and your violin and such, what type of other music do you enjoy listening to in your own time?
Well, I'm more a classical guy and everything. But when I grew up, you know, my favorite groups were Pink Floyd, Genesis, and Peter Gabriel. That was sort of my other music that I listen to, and I still do. Yeah, I have a lot of albums. I have a big LP collection, and so basically progressive rock music. That's what I like. Although I'll say this, it's my personal preference, but any genre of music has a very good music and not very good music. It doesn't matter what it's classical, it's pop music, it's rock music, it's hip hop, disco, whatever it is. Every genre has a fantastic music, and every genre has not so such a fantastic music. So, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay. One of my favorite combinations is to hear whenever pop music has a big orchestra with it. I love those kinds of arrangements and pairings. That deep sound of the orchestra and the strings, and oh, it's just so much fun for me to see that.
Symphonic. I was drawn to the orchestra by the sound, by the colors, and just infinite amount of possibilities. And the repertoire. Still, most and the best repertoire is written for the large orchestras. So, or arrange something for the big orchestras, and that's usually has the biggest impact on the audience as well as the performers.
I think this is so much fun. Thank you for revealing that you're a Pink Floyd fan, a maestro that loves Pink Floyd. That's so much fun.
And old Genesis too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. When Peter Gabriel used to sing there, that's the best, absolutely the best.
Oh, that is awesome. Hey, maybe one day you will do your own arrangement on the violin of some of that music.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see, okay. But for now, you have a trip to make back to the Ukraine, and we pray for safe travels for you, and we look forward to seeing you in action, you and the rest of the orchestra in action here in Las Vegas. And so we'll go to those websites for tickets and more information.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you for the time. Thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you.
Okay, so hopefully see you at the concert here.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Take care then. Bye-bye. Okay. Thank you so much, Maestro Krisa. And as I stated to him, safe travels. Our prayers are with you to arrive, have a wonderful concert to your fellow countrymen. And we hope to see you back here in Las Vegas for another series of wonderful concerts that will take place late next month. So I hope to attend some of those. So that's going to do it for this edition of Film Festival Radio Show. Thank you to our guest from the new Paramount Plus original film, Little Wing, and also, of course, to Maestro Taras Krisa. And that's it for this edition of Film Festival Radio Show. We'll see everybody next show. So take care of yourself, and we'll be back next show. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to another edition of Film Festival Radio with your host, Janice Malone. Be sure to download this and other episodes at filmfestivalradio.com.